Okay, here we go. So welcome, thanks for coming. This is episode one of this eight-week mini-series. I love that you called it that. This is how I'm going to do it. I am not very good at multitasking. I kind of, my brain sort of just completely unhinges at that. So I'm actually not going to look down at my chat screen while I'm talking, but I will stop once or twice at natural pausing points, and I'll look at the screen. So if anybody has questions or comments, please see, I looked down and it just completely, it completely screwed me up, so I'm not going to look at the screen. But save them up or write them in, and we'll spend some time on it. I'll take breaks going all the way through. And tonight we actually have a couple of people here in the room with me. So if anybody is interested in questions or comments at this end, we'll address them too. So do write down anything you would like to talk about, and we will get to it during one of those Q&As. So enlightenment, awakening, realization, liberation. I kind of use these terms pretty interchangeably because the words are such a slippery slope. And frankly, I don't think they mean a whole lot, but I'll do my best with them here because I want to be very practical about it, because there is so much about this subject that feels really woolly and vague. And I kind of think it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. So here we go. I'm calling this segment The Dynamic Choice for Awakening, because to a pretty large degree, I believe that this is something that we can choose for ourselves, which is kind of the opposite of everything that we've been taught. So, but in order to choose it for ourselves, there are some prerequisites that it seems to me that we need, so, or we need to decide upon. So it means that it is time to decide, that it's time to actually believe in the things that you intellectually know. And this is actually really huge for a lot of people. There's this sort of intellectual disconnect that takes place so many times, like, yes, I totally believe that God is love, and yes, I completely believe in an abundant universe in some kind of theory that has nothing whatsoever to do with me, you know, not when it comes to me personally and my existence. Because when it comes to me and my safety, I need to doubt and I need to control my experience instead of trusting in something greater. So, therefore, the number one prerequisite, which is absolutely key, in my opinion, is to finally admit that the source of all things, which is your source, is goodness and is kindness and is infinite love, even as it applies to you personally. So you need to be able to at least entertain the idea that this source always has your back, that it doesn't ever seek to undermine you. And before this, you might have intellectually believed that God is universal love, or that you yourself at your core essence are like a slice of unconditional love incarnate, because you're made out of that same pristine God essence as your creator. And, you know, intellectually, and that to place your trust in God and the universe is therefore a trustworthy thing to do. And if you're a student of something like the Course, these things are taken as, you know, as a given. So your thinking mind kind of accepts it, but the rest of you absolutely does not, because it flies in the face of what your rational mind believes when it looks at the world, you know, or even when it looks at itself. Because the evidence seems to suggest that God is cruel and that you yourself are kind of defiled and icky in nature, in your core essence. And then, you know, therefore nobody has your back, nor do you deserve for anyone to have your back. So obviously you need to live your life in a kind of a low defensive crouch, because it would be foolish not to, right? So all of that kind of semi-unconscious thinking needs to be dismantled, to be let go of as a prerequisite for moving forward in the choice for awakening. You have to draw a line in the sand and very consciously choose to drop the rational defenses and to make the choice to believe in the things that you already think you know. It really is, it's a big one. It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. So I'm going to suggest that we just try it together for just a moment right now and feel what it feels like to trust in a benevolent universe that loves you exactly as you are right now, not in some like imaginary future where you're already perfect. But try knowing that you personally are loved right now, not for anything you do, but simply because you exist, you know, like all those books and teachers talk about, the ones that we intellectually agree with. But right now, if you can decide that it's all true, just for the purposes of this little exercise, and decide that it's safe to trust, completely, just for the hell of it. It might feel incredibly unfamiliar to ignore the cautionary warnings of your mind about how awful you are or about how dangerous life is, and to just plain trust in divine source instead. But we're going to take a minute and explore that right now, just to see how it feels. This is a very worthwhile exercise, by the way, to do as often as you want to. I sometimes get on a roll and I do a slightly more advanced form of it, like 3 or 4 times a day. It's really good stuff. And it leads to all kinds of greater and greater openings. Okay, so let's move on to another thing that's absolutely key. And that is to recognize and admit that you, yes, you are an infinite creator. To admit that you attract and create every aspect of your experience, because it's impossible, like structurally, physically impossible, to be the victim of anything, no matter how it appears in the world of form. And this is so fundamental to the choice for awakening. Because if you try to go forward in the choice for realization and mastery, And I'm talking about mastery here because the choice to take these steps to awaken, to take your awakening into your own hands instead of passively waiting around for enlightenment to, like, mystically happen to you, that choice for action implies a degree of mastery or a dedication to mastery, I should say. So mastery in this context, in this way that I'm using it, means the active side of enlightenment, the proactive aspect of awakening, let's call it. And yes, that's a paradox that you can engage in active, like, doing, quote-unquote, as a means of aspiring to a fundamentally non-doing state of beingness. But, you know, what can I tell you? This road is full of paradoxes galore. So my advice on that, if you don't want to spend all your time tied up in knots over all the seeming contradictions, would be to just try and get used to it if you can. Let all the seeming opposites coexist together and let them all be true at the same time, because they actually really are. Our thinking minds enjoy tying things up in tidy little packages with labels on them, and one package has nothing whatsoever to do with another package over there. The contents of this package over here feels like it's true, so that means the contents of that package over there cannot also be true. But that is not how it really is on this journey, in my experience anyway. So it would be good to think of it like it's Christmas morning and enjoy that process of unwrapping all the separate boxes and then, like, mingling their contents all over the floor. Because that attitude will serve you well, I think, as you go forward. Anyway, back to the point that I was trying to get to about taking responsibility for yourself as the true creator of every aspect of your own experience. If you try to go forward into realization and mastery while you're still believing in the oh-so-seductive idea of victimhood, meaning the belief that other people or other outside circumstances are at fault for doing things to you, well, it just won't work. That, period. That's all I can say about it. Because these two belief systems, the belief in your own limitless creatorship versus the belief that you're like this helpless cog in the celestial machine and your fate is dependent upon outside forces, those two beliefs are completely incompatible. And not just incompatible, the flowering of awakened mastery can only occur because it rests on a foundation in which it is accepted that there's no such thing as personal victimhood. There's only wide open freedom, including the freedom to experience yourself as a victim of life or a victim of others, which, you know, might have been a choice you spent big portions of your life making before this. But nevertheless, it was only ever a choice. Other options for how to experience your life have always existed too. And even if you didn't consciously realize it, you have always had the freedom to choose because you are an infinite creator. So once again, it is time to make the choice to believe what you already know. And then, because you've been hearing that for how many years? I'm sure you have, that I am not a victim of the world I see, you know? So make the choice to believe what you already know, and then let the chips fall where they will on how the actual examples of these knowings play out in your daily life. Because daily life really is the only forum that counts here. There can't be any separation between the so-called spiritual practice and your actual daily life. Because your life, every moment of it, is your spiritual journey. It doesn't take place anywhere else. So the next time a circumstance happens where you find yourself tempted to blame something or somebody outside yourself for your inner condition, like, for example, you know, you made me angry, that thing on the news upset me, yada yada, whatever it is, try stopping in midstream. Just like cut it off and stop yourself. You've already heard a million teachings about how you shouldn't shoot the messenger and about how that person or that circumstance that pushes your buttons is actually innocent. Not just innocent, they're actually here to do you a favor. They're pointing out the places in you that still have hot buttons in need of dismantling. Because they're your buttons. They're your hot buttons. Nobody else's. And they existed within you because you chose for them to exist in you before that circumstance or that person ever came along to press on them. And if you didn't have that pre-existing button, there would be nothing for them to press. So it's the dismantling of those buttons that brings ever greater spiritual and emotional freedom. But that process can't occur if you still believe you're a victim of anything outside yourself. And again, this is a process of learning ever greater acceptance. Because there are absolutely no exceptions to the rule. Everything is chosen by you. You're the victim of nothing. And I'm the victim of nothing. So the opening up and rewriting of these belief systems is a work in progress, and it will likely keep going on in greater and greater depth for quite some time. But it needs to start in a pretty serious way for any kind of meaningful progress to occur. Okay, so here's one more thing that's absolutely key as a prerequisite, and that is the exercising the power of choice. So when I think of this one, I think of it using a shorthand symbol, I guess a metaphor, of the sun always shining in a blue sky. And you know this, I know this. We've all probably witnessed it from airplanes, that at a certain level, a certain height above the clouds, it's always sunny and clear. No matter what's going on down below, it's always, always sunny and clear. So I take this as a symbol for my own mental, emotional, spiritual state, and I realize that for me to get wrapped up in gloomy weather is an indulgence, actually. It's usually it's a habit. And I know that it's a choice. It's me choosing to sink to the level where the clouds are and to focus on the bad weather, to get all caught up in these projections of difficulty or drama, all of which I myself created, by the way, because I'm not the victim of anything outside myself. So when I feel that tug to go spiraling down, usually, not always, but usually, I remind myself of the sunny blue sky, and I recognize this choice that I have. I can get sucked into the storm clouds or the clouds of depression, which has been a lifelong tendency for me, as for many. I recognize that choosing to descend into the clouds for whatever reason instead of ascending into clarity is actually just a habitual choice, a particularly narcotic habitual choice. It's so automatic and familiar and comfortable even though it never feels good. Comfortable in the sense that it's well-trodden territory. But, you know, honestly, it feels like crap, right? Well, it does to me. So I recognize that speaking for myself, I don't want to do it anymore. It's not to say that I don't do it anymore, but I do it far less than ever before because I really, really don't want to do it anymore. So I choose, by and large, I choose to be active, not passive, when it comes to my state of being. And more and more often, I'm choosing the more unfamiliar choice. So when the clouds are inviting me down to their level, I'm making the choice for clarity instead. And it actually does feel remarkably weird, sometimes strangely uncomfortable, to make that choice to go up right in the middle of that slightly vulnerable moment when past history is suggesting that I should go down instead. So you could say that that in itself is a really worthy sort of life practice, to zig when you're habitually ought to zag. So you could say that this also is a form of mastery. It's to be able to watch what the conditioned mind is insisting that you should do, and then just calmly choose to do something else. And if you do that enough times, particularly during periods that aren't, you know, deeply stressful, where you're not having to, like, turn yourself inside out into a pretzel in order to do it, but when times are, you know, relatively normal, relatively calm, when you do it enough times and choose differently enough times, and you'll find, I believe, that the conflict, the stormy clouds, start to disappear on their own because they no longer serve very much of a purpose anymore in your life, and you're not asking for them to distract you anymore. Because, of course, they're only here to, what is that phrase, to serve at the pleasure of the president? You know, they're here serving you because you are requesting them to do so. But if you stop indicating to them that you want them to come and distract you, you will find that they will eventually take the hint. Because you're starting to make the choice for sanity and happiness over and over consistently, right during that choice point moment, which is, well, it's the only time that it actually counts. You know, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. It's when you're on your meditation stool making that choice with incense wafting. It's nice and it doesn't hurt, and it probably helps overall. But right when the clouds are present, is when this choice for clarity and happiness actually gets made. It's the only time that it truly can be made. You choose the clear sky, even when the temptation is present to go back to doing it the other way instead, you know, the cloudy way. But if you make the choice for a sunny sky over and over in the moment, then the skies you see will start gradually to reflect that consistent choice. Excuse me. Because if you turn down the cloudy weather's invitation over and over, in other words, it will eventually stop inviting you to its parties because, you know, you hardly ever show up anymore. So here's another homework exercise, if you like. If you find it interesting, you can play with this symbol of the sunny skies during the week whenever you feel yourself being pulled into cloudy weather. And see if you can notice in that moment that you have a choice. Just like really, really try to become acutely aware of the choice. And then, you know, just for the heck of it, try choosing to ascend instead of going for the more familiar, more downer route, whether, you know, whether that means irritation or frustration or depression or worry or boredom or whatever it might be. And, you know, see how that feels. See what happens. Okay, I'm going to take a break and look to see if I've looked at clouds from both sides now. Yeah. Let's see, Christmas morning. Okay. When I do that, my body ends up with the anxiety in some ways, but my mind refuses to go into the clouds. Well, that's not exactly a question, but I would say that that's a beautiful form of, well, it's a beautiful invitation for inquiry. If you notice that your body is taking on the constriction, there is still resistance there, even if you're not allowing your conscious mind to go there. That would be a wonderful thing to sort of go into that part of the body. We're sort of skipping ahead here. This is some other week's talk. But anyway, to ask, you know, to take your higher self in there with you, and shine a light and just sort of be present with that anxiety or constriction and see what it's made of, because that would be really helpful. Okay. Let's get back here. So I want to talk a little bit about passive versus active on the spiritual journey. The timing of things, as in the exact nature of your journey, that's not in your control, in your mental, you know, intellectual thinking mind control. I mean, technically it is. Technically, you know, it's you. It's in your control. It's the higher you that is orchestrating all of it for your highest good. But, you know, I'm talking about, I mean, it's not under the control of your conscious thinking mind. And yet, plenty of this decision to move forward is within your ability to actively influence and actively choose. And it's that which then brings you into closer alignment with your own higher mind, which in turn brings you a whole lot closer, a whole lot faster to the lofty states of being that you're wanting to experience in the first place. So you can have a huge influence over all of these things. If you really want it. And if you don't really want it, you can just say, screw it, and, you know, sit around watching TV or whatever and continue to hope that someday it will all just happen on its own. That's a perfectly valid choice, too, you know, and no disrespect to TV watchers, but you know what I mean. To wait around for a shift in consciousness that brings about an embodied knowing of all these things we're talking about here, the, you know, the constant goodness of your source, the steadfast shining of the sun in the blue sky, and the recognition that you are infinitely free and not a victim of anything. This is a needlessly passive belief in helplessness. Needlessly meaning that, it's my belief anyway, that you are capable, by virtue of the fact that you're a human being, you're capable of jump-starting your own spiritual freedom. Okay, here is a good way to start, or it's a way to start. Because I am an infinite creator, and because I'm also a human being who can accomplish pretty much anything I truly set my mind to, I begin by committing myself intellectually. I set the clear intention to take my spiritual freedom into my own hands, because realistically, that's what tends to come first, I think, long before embodied knowing or even belief is the intellectual commitment. So I set the strong intention, and even though I don't have anything to back it up yet at this point, I'm sort of doing like a fake it till you make it thing here, my intention to make a dynamic choice for my own liberation is registered very powerfully within the quote-unquote sea of awareness, as Jetta Mali calls it, which is just another way of saying it's the all that is consciousness. So, and this is where intention does register very, very powerfully. Any intention. And I'm an infinite creator, even if I don't truly believe that just yet. Nevertheless, it's true. So I just created an incredibly powerful seed of my own enlightenment here, you know, my own liberation. So now that this seed has been created, you know, I'll spend some time watering it and, you know, pulling out the weeds and singing little songs to it or whatever, you know, nurturing it. So why don't we do a brief guided meditation here, in which we each plant a clear, strong seed of intention. So let's do it now. I'm sorry I don't have music to go along with this. I wasn't quite sure how to get music inside the computer that would record at the same time that I'm speaking here. So pretend. In your mind, pretend there's something beautiful and soft, gentle happening in the background. Okay. Here we go. Get comfortable and close your eyes. And in your mind's eye, imagine you're holding a seed in your cupped hands. Focus on this seed confidently, peacefully. Breathing deeply in a relaxed way. As you look at it in wonder, it's a beautiful seed. And decide for yourself right now that this seed contains within it the living potential, the complete blossoming of your spiritual and emotional liberation. This is your personal seed. It's been lying dormant until now, patiently waiting until now. But it's completely healthy and vibrant. And it already contains all the encoded information within it that it needs in order to bloom. Keep breathing deeply, naturally. And with every breath, imagine that the seed responds. Imagine that it's roused from its slumber by your breath. And with each inhale, the seed glows with an inner light, waking up more and more. And with every exhale, this illuminated seed grows a little larger, a little more vibrant, a little more full of life. Your breath causes the seed to remember what it is, to remember its divine purpose. Now take your strong, vibrant light seed and plant it a few inches down in the rich soil directly beneath your feet. And let a free-flowing communion take place between this sacred seed and the physical self that you think of as you. Let there be a sweet, effortless joining of the two. Let them agree to work together in this shared intention. Breathe into this shared intention. Know that this intention is powerful enough to do the job. And vow to the seed that you are ready and willing to do your part. That you choose to be the gardener, the architect of your own Eden. Now thank the seed. And know that you can come back and visit it and commune with it anytime. It's not going anywhere. It'll stay with you as long as you want it to. And now, say goodbye to the seed. And as you breathe, slowly become aware of your surroundings, aware of your hands. And take one last deep, natural breath. And when you're ready, open your eyes. How was that for everybody? For me, I don't know, I find the symbol of the light seed to be just a really powerful visual symbol. I come back to it again and again, and it really helps me. Okay, so I'm going to say, oh, thank you very much. I'm glad you liked it. I'm going to say that I'm going to take a short glass of water, so maybe stand up and stretch for a few seconds or something, and then we'll start again in just a sec. Okay, we good? I'm back, so. So I'll start. Okay. So we've set a clear intention now to actively choose liberation. So that in itself is huge. But now what, you may ask? Well, what's next is to begin with just an intellectual commitment, because realistically, chances are that that's all it is intellectual or mental, at least at first. As in, I choose to intellectually remember that the sun is always present in the blue sky. That at least helps me remember that there are other options for how to perceive my situation. At least I recognize I have a choice to live my life in a higher way, even if I don't consistently act on it yet. And I choose to intellectually know that the universe is benevolent in nature and it has my back. No matter what the weather, you know, whatever the stormy clouds or the projections look like, I refuse to get carried away by gloomy perception. Instead, I want to bring myself back again and again into my intellectual choice to recognize the essential goodness of a supportive, loving universe. And yes, I actually do have the power to intellectually commit to these new beliefs, even if I may be doubting that I do have the power. I can commit and I can authentically feel the result. You know, maybe not right away. Maybe it takes a little time with consistently applied effort. But really, anybody can do this. Because if you think about it, if a bunch of Marines can intellectually, mentally commit to storm the beaches and win the battle no matter what, then I am also a human being. I'm made of the same stuff. I can muster that same quality of determination. I can approach this as if my life depends on it, because it does, you know. It really does. I can approach it as if my world depends on it, because it does, actually. Plus, I have this powerful seed of light that we just now planted together. So play around with putting real belief, not just intellectual recognition, real belief into the power and purpose of this light seed. Because the more power you decide that it has, guess what? The more power it has. So see what that feels like to just totally believe in it. If you can drop your usual doubtfulness and decide to believe completely in the power that this seed contains, that it can unfold your liberation for you, you know, with your sustained help, of course. If you believe in that power completely, I don't know what that was, then that it, what is happening there? I don't know. Someone's trying to get my attention on Pal Talk, who doesn't seem to be part of this group. So sorry about that. What was I saying? If you can believe completely in the power of this seed, then that will be exactly how much power it has. You know, if you believe completely, then that seed will be endowed with complete transformational ability to help you, because it's you who bestows the power. Always. And that's why this is one of the most powerful teachings ever, in a nutshell. It is whatever you say it is. That's the teaching. It has incredible depth. It is whatever you say it is. That, like, I don't even have language for how deep that is. But, of course, it only has mind-boggling depth if you're already willing to accept and believe that you're an infinite creator. Once you can stand still and accept your own power of intention and belief, then you can imbue just about anything with pure light and love and 100% healing transformational power. Because it's you, obviously, who has all that limitless power. But, you know, being human, we tend to need external symbols or permission slips, as Bentinho Massaro calls them, in order to trust in and gain access to our own power. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfectly fine. So that is why we imbue a seed with universal light. And now that seed's power is entirely real in our experience. It's awesome how that works. So at some point of confidence in your own awakened mastery, someplace probably way down the road, you would probably be able to eliminate the middleman and forget about using symbols like illuminated seeds of light, because you would just know. You would just know. But for now, it serves, I think, a very useful purpose for us. So, you know, we've talked about lots of different topics here. Lots of preliminary beliefs that need to be unwound and realigned so that some accelerated proactive steps can now be taken towards taking your awakening process into your own hands. And we've kickstarted the whole process by planting your seed of light. So you're good to go, right? See you next week. Bye. No. Yeah, but there should be plenty to keep you busy. Lots of things to think about, and a few forms of practice that you can work on if you so choose during the next week. Okay, so I'm gonna go once again and see if there happens to be any questions or comments, because that is as much as I prepared. Let's see. Unwound, very David Hoffmeister. Yeah. Once the self is seen through, is it an absolute fact that bliss and white light and overwhelming love is going to be experienced? Of course not. I would love to say yes. We'll talk a little bit more about this, actually, at the beginning of next week. Once the self is seen through. Bliss and white light and overwhelming love. Gosh. Good, because I feel I've seen through it, but none of that has happened. Yeah, those are optional add-ons. Like, you know, your cart is empty. You'd have to buy the apps that go in it. We'll talk about all that next time. What a huge, huge subject that is. Yeah. All right. Well, we're early. I'll leave it up to you. We can leave dead air and go home early for 9 minutes, or I can, like, read you a couple of pages out of the Enlightenment Project. Oh, hi, Sonia. Thank you. So is that a yes for dead air? Oh, read, please. Oh, it's up to me. I'll do a little brief reading. It's impossible for me to tell beforehand what an hour's worth of material is, so I'm leaving it up to you. Okay. Well, I'll just start at the beginning because I have a feeling there's going to be lots of dead air over there. In the next 8 weeks. So this is chapter 1, Oneness and the Ego Mind. And I wrote this in 2011, mind you, so some of this may not be what I feel about things anymore. I haven't actually gone back and read my own book in a long time. Okay, the road less traveled. If enlightenment were a country, let's call it the United State of Oneness, and we were planning a trip there on our next vacation, it would be a good idea to read up on the place beforehand, get the lay of the land. I know, enlightenment isn't a destination, and we can't get there from here. Bear with me, please. It's an analogy. The moment we cracked open the first enlightenment brochure or attended the first lecture, we would discover its language and customs are incomprehensible to those of us who don't already live there. The place is just too different from our own. We would need some kind of translator or guide just to help us start making sense of the guidebook. That, hopefully, is where this book comes in. I don't live in that mythical country, but I've visited now and then. I'm not a native speaker by any means, but I well understand the needs of a traveler en route to this strange land. I can do my best to translate for you, maybe help you find a public restroom or hail a cab. I've also been given a pretty great set of maps. They're well tested, and they've never failed me. I can share them with you if you like. You might find them useful along the way. My own impressions of this strange country are fleeting, so they're naturally spotty and incomplete. I'm not the most experienced guide, God knows. But if you're interested, I'll let you in on everything I've learned so far on my own journey. This one's called I Could Be Wrong. A Course in Miracles famously asks, would you rather be right or happy? Everybody understands this deceptively simple question to some degree, and anybody, spiritually inclined or not, can answer it. For the first few decades of my life, I would have confidently answered, I want to be right, of course. That's because I thought happiness was for people who weren't smart enough to notice how screwed up the world was. And since I was convinced legitimate happiness didn't exist, smug superiority was my consolation prize of choice. It was only after 10 or 15 years of sincere spiritual practice that I began to realize my habitual cynicism wasn't fun anymore. Being right was actually causing me pain. Maybe it was time to give happy another look. Yet this understanding of the right or happy equation barely scratched the surface of its true meaning. As any sincere student of oneness can tell you, there's quite a lot more riding on your answer than initially meets the eye. This is what that question is really asking. Do you want to remain a slave to your fixed belief in this illusory world, causing yourself unimaginable pain in the process? Or do you want to discard what you think you know and see the perfect, joyous truth as it really is? You might still think it sounds like a no-brainer. Oh, that's an easy one, you say to yourself. If being right is the source of all pain and illusion, and choosing happiness would bring perfect truth and joy, then I definitely vote for happy. Right or happy may seem an obvious question, maybe even a little glib. Yet it's not a glib or obvious or easy question. The choice between right and happy is pretty much the deepest, toughest question ever asked of anyone. And inside that question's honest answer is found the very heart of enlightenment. Oh, and the destruction of everything you've ever known. And I think that's the perfect place to end this. On that note. Oh, fun. You have no idea where Long Time No See came from and how it ended up in your hands. I'm glad you liked it. All righty. Well, I will turn it over to somebody, whoever's coming next. And big kiss to all of you. You're very, very welcome. And I will see you next week. Am I still editing Nook's book? No, I am not. I did book number one. Yeah. Oh, Kathy, hi. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'll see you next time. Thank you, Sonia. Bye, everybody.